This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
This is an Odyssey original.
This is Coronavirus Daily. I'm Charles Feldman.
I'm Mike Simpson from the KNX Odyssey Studios in Los Angeles. Booster shots could be coming sooner. Wall Street Journal says, according to the federal regulators, they're moving to give emergency use authorization to booster shots within 6 months instead of the 8 that we had heard. So a couple months earlier.
Students across the U.S. starting the new school year on campus, but will they finish it at home?
You remember weddings, people having them again. That means spending money as a guest.
Let's start with booster shots and their timeline. Dr. Sandra Bliss Nelson is an infectious disease specialist with Massachusetts General Hospital. Doctor, explain this to us. Why, you know, first it was going to be 8 months, now 6 months, maybe. Why?
You know, I can't say that I know where the 6 month versus 8 month data comes from. I think we're all a little bit uncertain about whether boosters are even clearly needed at this time. This announcement has come from the White House, but the FDA has not yet approved boosters other than those for immunocompromised persons, and the CDC has not yet weighed in on this. The only reason I think that we might be talking about this 6 month window is because of data that was finally released this week from Israel, which did show a decline in effectiveness of the vaccine over time when you looked at people who were vaccinated back in December and January relative to a little bit later.
But am I correct that what it showed was a decline in efficacy about being infected with the virus, as opposed to a decline, a real decline in efficacy when it comes to serious illness, hospitalization, death?
So I think what you're saying is absolutely true for the bulk of the data that has already come out. There's a lot of evidence that's come out from within the United States and many other countries, the United Kingdom, Qatar, for example, that say that really what we are seeing are small declines in vaccine effectiveness over mild infection. So we are seeing more breakthrough infections, the vast majority of which are mild. But almost all of the studies have not shown any impact on severe disease to include hospitalization or death. The Israel study is the first to show that there is a change in over time with the effectiveness against even severe disease. Having said that, I do think that the Israel study has the potential for what we call confounders, things that are really confusing the data that may be affecting the way that we can interpret it.
Okay, so we can explain that to people, and you just have for us. But there's a crowd in their car right now who are hearing you say all these things, and they say, yes, we know you're a doctor, and I'm not a doctor, but I don't feel safe. I want my booster shot, and no, nothing's going to convince me otherwise. What do you say to them?
So I think that, you know, we have to really ask ourselves, what is our goal of vaccination? Because if our goal is to prevent all disease, then it is likely that boosters will serve some role, that we think that boosters will probably reduce the number of these mild breakthrough infections. Over time, that strategy is going to become a little bit less effective. Boosters will very likely always reduce your effectiveness against these mild disease. But the memory response, which protects you against severe disease, is really what's important. And that really isn't going to be driven by the booster effect.
Is there a concern that, I know early on there was a concern at the trial level for all these vaccines about whether these vaccines might produce in some circumstances a more vigorous response to infection with the coronavirus, so having the opposite effect of preventing serious illness, and that hasn't materialized thus far, but is there any serious possibility that once we start giving people boosters and perhaps giving them at shorter and shorter intervals, that that might occur?
You know, I think that's a theoretical possibility. We haven't really seen any signals that that would be the case. The only thing that I think we're monitoring fairly closely is this concept of the multisystem inflammatory syndrome that's been seen in children. And that is something that we're looking closely to make sure that the vaccines are not mimicking. That's not the same as a worsened response to the infection, but an inflammatory response after the infection resolves. Outside of that, I don't think there's reason to think right now that we're going to see worsening of infection because of the vaccine.
Important to note, too, right, we can give a whole bunch of people their third shots, but still you have to get the unvaccinated their first dose and hopefully the second one.
You know, absolutely. I think when you talk about what are the goals of vaccination, obviously we really want to protect against severe disease and death. That is by far the first and foremost goal. Preventing transmission is a secondary but incredibly important goal. And when we talk about what we can do in the long run to emerge from this pandemic, it's going to be getting as many people their primary vaccine series as possible. We're not going to impact the goal or the pace of the pandemic through booster doses. That's only going to come from vaccinating as many people as we can who've not yet been vaccinated.
I mean, did we just set our goals way too high and unrealistically high about these vaccines? I mean, most vaccines, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, most vaccines don't prevent infection. They prevent serious disease. Am I right about that?
You are 100% correct in that. It's the difference between what we call sterilizing immunity, where you can never get sick, and functional immunity, which is really protecting people against severe disease. And really, respiratory viruses, we don't have vaccines that lead to that sterilizing immunity. I think in some ways we were initially misled by this astronomically high results of the early stage trials showing such high 95% effectiveness, even against mild infection. But in the long run, that probably wasn't realistic. And I think we need to reset our expectations, really, that we're focused on severe disease. This is probably going to be something we're going to have to live with at some level. And as long as we're staying outside of the hospital and these diseases become more and more mild as they attenuate with time, that's okay.
Do you worry at all that between this 8 months and the 6 months over the last couple of weeks, people are going to have those concerns that their immunity is suddenly going to drop off? And Charles, you and I have said 1,000 times, it's not like the next Tuesday after 6 months goes by that suddenly it's all
right.
Gone.
Yeah,
it's not a cliff.
Certainly, I think we've seen throughout this pandemic that people's fears are oftentimes unrealistic, and it's really because the science is confusing and it's moving quickly. But I don't think that there's absolutely no reason at this point to be worried between 6 months and 8 months, or even if the CDC decides next week to defer the booster doses for a little bit longer. I don't think any of us should worry about that. I do think we should try to protect those who have weaker immune systems, and that's already ongoing. That population is already eligible for a booster dose.
Dr. Sandra Bliss Nelson, infectious disease specialist, Massachusetts General Hospital, and assistant professor at Harvard Med. Doctor, thanks.
The hope all over the U.S. is that kids would get back to some sort of normal by returning in person to school. But COVID has been trying to crush that hope as schools across the country have dealt with outbreaks and have had to quarantine students.
Schools here in L.A. just started, already 6,500 students quarantining after exposure or positive tests. Would vaccine mandates change things? Can the kids going to stay on campus? Nick Melvoin, member of the L.A. School Board of Education. Nick, you've been around touring some of the schools. Your take on how things are going so far?
I think they're going well, and these were expected challenges of reopening a school district while we're still in a pandemic. And of course, with Delta where it's at, some of those were unanticipated, but some of this was going to be anticipated. And LA Unified is running the largest school-based testing program in the country, and that is enabling us to catch cases early. It's unfortunate that we had the community spread at Grant Elementary, but that was our first incident. And the other cases we were able to catch before kids are getting on campus or as soon as they have it and isolate. And, you know, the 6,500 kids who are isolating doesn't mean anywhere near that many cases. We're at about 2,000 positive cases, but thanks to our layers of safety, testing, vaccinated employees, masks, filtration systems, I do believe that we're moving forward, getting kids back where they need to be in school, but doing it safely and catching those positive cases as soon as they arise.
Okay, so obviously once the kids have to stay home for a while, they have to shift their learning back to online. We heard from one parent already complaining that the online learning now isn't as good, doesn't really come up to the level that it did before. Have you heard that? And if not, what do you make of that complaint?
I have heard that, and I think it's fair. And I'm hopeful that the district is going to update its guidance on the continuity of learning plan for kids who are quarantining within the next day or two. The challenge was that the state law on this is very restrictive in what we're able to do when kids are home. And I think this was a law that was passed when we weren't in the Delta environment. And so there wasn't an assumption that we would have so many kids quarantining. And so we have to fill out contracts with individual families about what's called short-term independent study, even if they're just gone for a few days. So that being said, the district has been revising its continuity of learning plan, and in the coming days, we'll announce an update where it does look more like it did in the spring, where if a class is quarantining, everyone's Zooming from home. And if some kids are Zooming from home and a teacher's in a classroom, they might be doing some simultaneous instruction. So we're working on that now and hope that we can announce something better in the coming days, because I think that parent's concern is shared and is fair.
I guess I'm wondering, though, how it was missed, because you've got all these different employees who are doing this, and you knew there would be cases, as you had said. We're going to send kids home throughout the next few months. So why was there no red flag raised that said, hey, you know, the law says that we're just supposed to send you home with some worksheets, and that's not going to be even as good as online learning over the spring, which everybody complained about anyways.
Yeah, I mean, the flags were raised by me and by others, and part of it was just capacity at the state and local level, and part of it was unrealistic expectation of how many kids would be quarantining, again, when the state passed this law. So it's taken us now, you know, this is day nine of school, some time to work with our state partners and also work with our labor partners. We're actually meeting with our teachers union as you and I are speaking to try to get this clarity. So it's, you know, just as we evolved, I pushed over the weekend for a change in our quarantine policy so that asymptomatic vaccinated individuals don't have to quarantine. We announced that Monday. This has been iterative as we're learning, and we're grateful for folks' flexibility as in these next, you know, these first 2 weeks and the next few weeks, we're really crystallizing best practices to make sure as many kids as possible are in class learning, but we're doing so safely.
You know, before the kids went back to school, we had a number of teachers on the show who, you know, were a little concerned that after having spent time at home for such a protracted period learning from home, that there might be some disciplinary issues, that, there, you know, that kids are going to go back into a classroom environment and not really know how to handle things. It may be a bit too early to tell, but so far, how is that aspect going?
Well, you know, it's something that was on my mind for the 17 months that we were closed, not only the academic learning loss, but the social emotional challenges, as you allude to. We've been gratified that the federal relief dollars have enabled us to hire mental health professionals, more psychiatric social workers, counselors, nurses, to help students as they come back to school. And we're seeing that that's been successful. We're also seeing that there's a shortage of these folks in California and nationally. And so I was at schools this morning where we've given them funding to hire a social worker, but they haven't been able to find the individual. So that is the challenge right now for the district. And if anyone's listening who is interested in being hired, we have a lot of hiring going on. But we are seeing that while kids are excited to be there, you know, kindergarten is not mandatory in California. So we have some first graders who are coming in who have never been in school. And there are those challenges. And so we're hiring and we're equipping teachers. We're doing some specific training on this so that we can welcome kids back as they get acclimated to what it's like to be in school after 17 months.
Is there some level where you get more concerns with kids than the number of them that are isolated? Because we have the 6,000 now, but they're going to get better or test negative. But we're going to keep having positives. I mean, you're doing the weekly testing, and you know you can't catch everybody. So if they don't get flagged this week, they're going to get flagged next week.
Yeah. And so another area that I've been focusing on and ensuring the district does better is the contact tracing, or what we're calling the community engagement piece, because we are we have not been reaching families quickly enough, either to let them know they are a close contact, or more importantly, to let them know when they can go back to school. And parents I know have been reaching out about that. So the board has approved a doubling of the contracted employees who are calling families. So that is something we are ramping up. We're also, or I've asked that we also revise our quarantine policies to see and make sure they match the county and the most updated CDC guidance, so that we don't in every case have to isolate students for as long as we may have been doing if they're were wearing masks, if the exposure was outside. So, you know, this stuff is inherently confusing. We have medical experts on our team, and the science is evolving even daily in terms of what we're being told. And so we're trying to adapt, because we do want to make sure the majority of our kids are back in person, but that we don't let kids who are sick come in and infect others.
Nick Melvoin, member of the LAUSD Board of Education.
Coming up after a short break, weddings. They're making a comeback. Weddings were among the many events postponed due to the pandemic, but with things more on the normal side now, more brides are walking down the aisle.
That means for us, you got to buy something off the registry. Christine Benz, Director of Personal Finance at Morningstar, with WBBM's Jim Gudis.
Well, you've got a lot of couples, Jim, who are rushing in to get their weddings in. I think maybe things have been tamped down a little bit in the very recent past due to their Delta variant, but there was a lot of pent-up demand, and so many couples are rushing to tie the knot, and so you've got a lot of people who are in that danger zone age band between like age 25 and 35 who might have 10 or more weddings in a given year. It's absolutely insane, and it also can really hurt their budgets.
So what's some advice to help people with this? I mean, obviously, I guess it's like anything else. If you find yourself with multiple weddings, I imagine that you have to kind of set a budget and a limit or that sort of thing, which is kind of tough, because usually when you're invited to a wedding, it's someone you like and you want to do something nice for them. So what's the best way to keep this in check and reasonable to a degree?
I think one of the first tests is just to ask yourself, is this something that I want to be a part of? Am I close to this person? And is it important that I be there? So first, make sure you're clear on that before you even get into setting a budget. You do not have to attend every wedding that you're invited to. But once you've decided to go, a couple of steps that you could take would be to, you know, perhaps attend one shower if you're invited, but set the limit on that. Don't attend two or three showers. Plan to rewear some of your outfits, especially if the same people won't be showing up at these same weddings. And then I also like the idea of getting creative about gifts. So you don't want to cheap out. You want to give something special to these people who are special to you. But think about a personalized gift. Etsy has a lot of great personalized items. Sometimes they require a little bit of lead time because they're customized. But be creative. Don't assume that you have to spend a really high amount to give a high impact gift.
Can the wedding registry be your friend here, Christine?
Well, absolutely. You can use the wedding registry as a starting point. And oftentimes couples really do want and need those things that they have on their wedding registry. But take a look. You can see and stay within your price point when you're shopping. And the other thing is, many couples are opting for multiple venues, multiple wedding registries. So hop around, see which has the most attractive combination of gifts that can help you stay within your budget.
Anything else that people can do to kind of keep an eye on things, or what maybe a big mistake that people make that kind of gets them into a bit of a financial hole?
Well, a big mistake is letting a lot of wedding events sink your own personal finances. This is a life stage when people are really getting their financial lives off the ground, where they are planning their own futures, maybe paying for their own educations or saving for home down payments. Really try to keep those goals front and center, and don't let wedding attendance derail your own goals that you're saving for. Keep that first and foremost in your mind.
That's Christine Benz, the Director of Personal Finance at Morningstar.
The pandemic is having a big impact on public school enrollment. The U.S. Department of Education finds enrollment has dropped by more than 1.5 million students. Some have switched to private schools or at-home learning. Others have just vanished from the system. Counselors are working the phones at one elementary school in Las Vegas. They're looking for kids still missing from class weeks after the school year began. Administrators are planning next to go door to door to track down their remaining lost kids.
This is an Odyssey original. You can find us on the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.